there. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly discussion on antidepressants and the issues surrounding them.
Hello, this is James, and welcome to episode 28 of Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly podcast discussing antidepressants and mental health. This week, we talk to Kaya Grossberg. Kaya shares her own experiences of the psychiatric system and psychiatric drugs, and also tells us how she now helps and supports those struggling to withdraw from their psychiatric medications. Kaya promotes a naturopathic approach to supporting people with their health and well-being. Kaya, thank you so much for talking with me today. I just wanted to start by asking a little about you and your background and how you came into contact with psychiatric drugs.
Sure. Thanks, James. So when I was a child, I was in therapy from a pretty young age. My parents got divorced and my mom is a social worker. And in the culture that I grew up in, therapy was kind of considered to be the standard helpful treatment for somebody who might be going through something. And so my mom basically sent me to therapy as a kid to help me process my feelings about their divorce and such. And I had a pretty good experience with my therapist. I had the same therapist throughout my entire childhood, basically from age like 8 or so until my teenage years, all throughout high school. And when I was around 16, my therapist started to recommend Prozac, or the medication, actually. She would just call it the medication. And, you know, it was in the 90s, the mid-90s, and it was still pretty new. So my parents were pretty much against the idea because in the world that they grew up in, you wouldn't give somebody drugs for their emotions. It just wasn't really that acceptable yet. And since it was considered like this new thing that people didn't really know about yet, my therapist would sort of talk to me like she didn't even really know about it yet, but it almost seemed like to her it was like this magical new thing that was just being discovered that like was really helping people. And she really wanted me to give it a shot because she had supposedly seen it help other people. And she told me that she thought it was really the only thing that could help me feel happier. At that time her idea, what she also told me was that she thought maybe once I went away to college and had a very different lifestyle that I might be able to find other ways of making myself happier. But in my current circumstances of like having a really high stress family life and high stress school life and living in New York City and like all this stress, like I just had a very stressful childhood and adolescence. Yeah. So in her mind, the medication, as she called it, was, the thing that she thought could actually make me feel happier.
I can see why to anyone suffering emotional distress, the thought of something that we're told will help is going to be appealing, isn't it?
Well, it was to her. I think to me, it's kind of interesting, but I think even at that age, I was skeptical and it didn't sit right with me. So I think, you know, even I was always into alternative health and spirituality. And, you know, even at that age, like I was doing yoga and I was meditating and I was writing poetry and I was just like very in touch with my soul. So there was like this part of me that just felt like psychiatry was evil. Like I could feel that even at that age. It was like my soul just felt this is not right, you know, when she would talk about it. And it also was hard for me when she talked about it because I had trusted her so much up until then. And I really felt like she cared about me. And then she just kept every week bringing up the medication. And I started to feel like she was like losing faith in me and was starting to shift over any faith she had had in me over to the medication. But eventually all the suggesting she had sort of wore me down. And I think that she also put these ideas into my mom's mind too. So my mom eventually kind of came around and said, well, maybe we should just try this. And I kind of was like, okay, I'll just try this. And I went to a psychiatrist and he gave me some Prozac samples. So that was basically my first experience of trying psychiatric drugs.
And Kaya, when you first took the Prozac, did you experience adverse effects?
So yeah, I took those Prozac pills in the New York City subway station. And I just remember right away, I could feel the toxicity immediately when I took those pills. But then after a little while, they actually did make me feel happier temporarily. Like, I was almost manic a little bit, and I was kind of like, I don't know, they really did actually make me feel happier and less anxious for a little while. And at that age, I guess I was like, okay, this is cool, you know, for a brief while. And but I did have side effects, like I got acne, and I guess like the manic quality was sort of a side effect, because suddenly I just felt like I had to be constantly socializing, even though I was more of an introvert. But honestly, that age and with just that one drug, I didn't have too many side effects.
I mean, in some ways, it was almost like being like a little bit drunk all the time.
And Kaya, how long did you stay on the Prozac for?
I stayed on it for maybe almost a year. So this was my first experience taking psychiatric drugs, but I had a whole other experience later on that was much more extreme. But this time with the Prozac, I only stayed on it for a little less than a year, and then I just stopped taking it. And I didn't actually even have withdrawal effects. I think Prozac is actually, it doesn't really have bad withdrawal effects, because it leaves the body pretty slowly, and that was my experience.
It's meant to be one of the easier ones to stop because it has a fairly long half-life, but then many struggle with Prozac too, so it's almost an individual thing, isn't it?
Right, and I also think, you know, I was like 17 and I'd only been on it for a year. I think when you're that age, it's like your body can sort of bounce back pretty easily from stuff, more so than people who are older and have been on it for maybe 30 years or something.
And Kaya, when you stopped, did you feel any readjustment in your character or mood? Were there any lingering effects?
You know, it's interesting because I was so young and like unaware of the drug and what it was doing and everything. I was so unaware of the whole thing that I don't think I even really noticed or knew. I felt some kind of impulse to get off of it, even though originally I'd had these effects that I liked. And I think, again, it was like this sensitivity that I had where I didn't want to be on a drug for my emotions. Like, that just didn't feel okay to me. That didn't sound okay to me. It just didn't resonate with the way I view life, with my overall take on life. I think when I got off, you know, I was going through other transitions. Like, I was going to college at that time. So it's hard to really say how I do think, like, looking back, that I did become more myself after I got off of it.
Okay, and so what happens next in your story, Kaya?
Well, basically, a few years later, when I was in college, I was having a lot of spiritual emergence and a lot of things going on. And a lot of it for me was a spiritual emergence type of experience. And then I'd have, I guess, what could be called a psychotic break at a certain point in summer after my third year of college. And I ended up being hospitalized and put on a whole bunch of heavy-duty drugs. And then it's kind of a long story, but I ended up on like a drug cocktail at one point, and I was completely debilitated. One of those drugs was I was on two antidepressants in that cocktail. One was Prozac again, and the other was Effexor. And then I was also on Risperdal, Boost Bar, Xanax or Ativan, I forget which, and several other drugs. So basically, that time, that was like my real heavy duty psychiatric drug experience. And in terms of the withdrawal, again, Prozac wasn't the problem, but Effexor, another class of antidepressant, was really hard to withdraw from. And so was Risperdal, and so was the benzo. That was like my really big, big experience of like having psychiatric drugs really take over my life.
That is a substantial cocktail of drugs to be on. And I wanted to ask, in the hospital when the drugs were administered, was that a compliant thing or were the drugs forced on you?
They were forced on me. So when I first entered the hospital, I was held down and shot with a benzo. And then when I was in the hospital, they put me on Risperdal, Ativan, and it was all against my will. And actually, I ended up at another hospital where I was allowed to refuse the meds, and I did, but then they were going to try to send me ordered to, but luckily my mom came and picked me up and sort of got me out of that situation eventually.
That really does sound frightening, to be forcibly drugged and to not feel like you have any control over the treatment you're receiving.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that I wasn't even scared. It's kind of weird. I was in such a like heightened state and I knew so little about the system. Like if it happened to me now, I would be terrified. But at that time, I just didn't even know like what kind of power they had. I didn't even know how the drug worked, how hard they were to get off of, or like how easily the system can, you know, force people onto them. I didn't know any of that.
So I guess maybe ignorance was bliss because I just was like, I'm not taking these, you know.
And Kaya, I just wanted to ask about how you approached withdrawing from those medications. Did you have a set plan and did you have any support during that time?
Yeah, well, basically, I ended up being in a program called Windhorse Associates in Massachusetts, which was like an alternative mental health kind of thing. So I had a team of people helping me. I had these people that didn't know I was so sick and fatigued because I was on the drugs. So like, here I was on 7 drugs, and they were just calling it me having a chronic fatigue or like an energy crisis, because they had no idea that these drugs could make me completely exhausted and incapacitated. So it kind of was like about having them all come on board and recognize that I did need to withdraw from these drugs. But I think for me, it was also like, once I was on all of those drugs, I didn't even know what was going on. I was so like debilitated mentally as well as physically that I didn't even know what was happening. Like, I didn't even know these drugs were making me completely sick. I think it was about actually hearing a few things from other people. Like, I happened to be in the right place at the right time and hear some other psychiatric survivors talk about their experiences on psychiatric drugs, which gave me the clue that actually these drugs were what were causing my fatigue and debility. So once I made the decision that I needed to get off all of these drugs, I had like a very clear sense, yes, I need to get off of this. And then I was able to advocate for myself, and the people around me sort of followed that lead and they were able to support me. In terms of how I withdrew practically, it was really hard. And I was so sick and like unhealthy, like I had no energy. So it was just really hard to go through that withdrawal. And I did it very slowly. And there was a time when I was withdrawing from Risperdal that, you know, it was like too much, like the panic attacks were just too much for me. So I had to go back up and then, you know, withdraw again more slowly. And I actually had a dream that gave me this guidance to continue to withdraw from Risperdal, but just go slower. Mm. I got that message from a dream because I think that there was a time when I was like, maybe I can't do this. Maybe I'm just not able to get off of this, you know.
That's kind of where I am now. I'm at the lowest dose of my antidepressant, but anxiety about reducing further is a very powerful thing. I'm really pleased to hear, Kaya, that your self-awareness helped you to recognize what was happening to you and enabled you to complete your tapering.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's hard, you know, and I think it's so different for every single person that I never want to try to make it sound easier than it is or, you know, harder than it is or anything. But it was hard. And I think I also had the good fortune of like not having to work during that time, having some family support. And also then I went back to school because I hadn't finished college. And I would withdraw like during the breaks when we had a week off or something. I would do my next taper. I think it can be really hard if people have, you know, a family, have to work every day and don't have that space to take time off. Because when I withdrew, I had such intense kinds of experiences that it was like sometimes I couldn't even get out of bed. Like I would get really lightheaded or really nauseous or so many different types of withdrawal experiences, and I never knew what to expect. So I think that having some space and being able to take time off from work and other obligations is also definitely necessary for a lot of people.
It is, isn't it? And as you say, as important as having support so you don't feel isolated. And Kaya, I wondered, after you had finished your tapering, how long did it take you, do you think, before you felt back to full strength?
I'm not exactly sure. Maybe just a few months after I was completely done with all the withdrawal, because it took me almost a whole year basically to go through all of the withdrawal, because I would just do one drug at a time. And like I said, I was on a lot. But I was living in this town, Northampton, Massachusetts, and there was a group there called the Freedom Center. It was in Northampton where I was living, and they had meetings that were like a block away from my house. Or my apartment, I should say. But so I started going to those meetings while I was in the process of withdrawal. And that was like this huge gift from grace. You know, it was like I wasn't even really able to socialize or do anything else. And it happened to be so close to where I was living that it just it made like my withdrawal process and my entry back into the world, because I was completely isolated for that year or two before that. It made my reentry into the world almost seamless because I had all this support from other people who had gone through it. And then I immediately had opportunities to start using my experience to help other people and to inspire other people because, you know, I would start speaking at colleges. Even while I was going through withdrawal, I started speaking at colleges and college classrooms and at not while I was in withdrawal, but right after that, I started speaking at conferences and such, about my experiences, because right after I withdrew, I was so fired up about it. I really, really wanted to get the message out to other people who might be going through it, you know.
That's an incredibly selfless thing to do, to struggle with your own withdrawal and to use that to help and support others. That deserves admiration and respect, and well done for standing up for others who are experiencing tough times with these drugs.
That impulse to help others is like actually part of what helps us, like, from psychiatry ourselves, because it gives us something else to focus on besides just feeling like a victim, you know, and it gives us this sense of like almost like a spiritual path of service or a mission, you know, because I mean, you look everywhere you look, at least in this country, there are people that are on psychiatric drugs that, you know, feel like they have to be because they've been told they have some kind of lifelong condition that doesn't even actually exist.
That's true. There certainly are many mistruths that are used to coerce us into treatment, aren't there? These drugs aren't treating any biological abnormality, even though that's how they're sold to us. And Kaya, I just wondered if you had a friend or colleague who's considering taking an antidepressant or antipsychotic or mood stabilizing drug and they came to you for advice, what would you say to them?
That's a great question. And if they specifically asked me for advice, I think this actually happened to me in the fall with a friend of mine. I guess I suggested to her to consider her body because psychiatric drugs do a lot of harm to our bodies, and especially for people who already have health issues. So like most people that are going through really intense depression or anxiety or whatever it may be, emotional struggles or trauma, if they're over a certain age, they tend to also have physical health issues. And psychiatric drugs cause so many health complications that I just always want to advise people to consider their body, because without the health of our body, as I learned so severely, we can't really do anything. We can't even, you know, like I was in a place at a time where I couldn't even go out for a walk. I couldn't even exercise if I wanted to. I couldn't even cook myself good food because I was so fatigued and out of it. So I just don't want that, you know, I don't want anyone else to have to go through that. And I know, you know, hundreds of people who are in that state in some way where it's like because they're on these psychiatric drugs, they feel apathy. They have a really hard time following through with things. They have a really hard time meeting any goals or exercising or eating healthy because the drugs strip a lot of their energies and motivations away. And see if there's something else you can do to really support your body instead of something that will damage it. Because there's a lot of stuff we can do to support our bodies that will actually also support our mental health. And it's like a win-win rather than a lose-lose, you know?
I think that's really good advice. And certainly looking at your nutrition and your social life, and if you're happy in your job or you're studying, those are things you can address without the fear of adverse effects, unlike medications.
Definitely. And that's a good point you bring up about, you know, your social life and your work and all these things, because even though we've been told that mental illness, quote unquote, is a brain disease, it's not true. What it actually is when we feel mentally or emotionally distressed is that our being is telling us that something's not right. And that's the thing too, is like, we need to be able to get those messages from our feelings. And if we drug them, then we don't have as much access to those messages that our body, mind, and soul are always, you know, trying to tell us, to give us, to guide us in our life.
That's a very important point, and ironic too, because I've had people tell me that they feel their psychiatric drug has discouraged them from listening to their body's needs, and they've fallen into bad habits. So the medication is almost doing the opposite of what we should be doing to improve our well-being.
Exactly. And, you know, it's like sometimes I think medications, like the way I experienced as a teenager, can make you feel really good at first, like maybe for a few months. And then you start to have all these other side effects. I mean, some people feel bad right away. But I think they're designed to be fast acting so that somebody will feel pretty good initially, or that when they do the drug trials, they might get a positive result because they only do the trials for 6 weeks or so. So, and then after that period, there's like the time after that where the drug starts to do more and more damage on the body. and then we have all these problems, and then it's hard to withdraw from. So it's almost like a bait and switch kind of situation, or like a dishonesty from the beginning.
You're right. We're not given the information that we need to make an informed choice about treatment, are we? And Kaya, was there anything else that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, what I would love to talk about is like working with people who are struggling with psychiatric drug withdrawal, who have been on them for a long, long time, and who are on like the heavy duty ones, like the neuroleptics, such as Risperdal, and the mood stabilizers, quote unquote, such as Lamictal. Like there are certain drugs that people really, really struggle to get off of. And I've been working to consult with people for the past 4 years or so as just a personal consultant, like privately. And it's hard, you know, I just want to say it's hard. Like, I think that what we need as a whole society is to create like real full centers, like retreat centers, or just a lot of resources to help people get off of these drugs, because so many people are struggling alone or just grappling for this, for any resources at all. And most of them are not covered by insurance. So people are having a really hard time getting their basic needs met in terms of safe withdrawal support.
That's very similar to the UK and probably many other places across the world too. There really is nowhere I can go to get regular support, and doctors are generally not accepting that withdrawal is more than a minor or short-lived thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's hard because I get contacted by so many people, and sometimes it's like all the stories sound so similar, and it really breaks my heart that so many people are struggling with this and have virtually no one to turn to, or just, you know, most people that have been on psychiatric drugs for a while, not everyone, it depends, you know, how debilitated the drugs have made them and so forth. But a lot of people are low income and can't necessarily afford, you know, private consulting or private doctors that aren't covered by insurance or specialists. So yeah, it's really, really heartbreaking to see so many people being damaged by the medical system, and then the medical system not providing the help to help people recover from that damage.
To have a center where you can go to meet with other people with lived experience would make a big difference to people struggling with these issues.
Yeah. And you know, how great would it be if insurance covered all kinds of things that would help people withdraw? I mean, I'm lucky that I happen to be living in a state where naturopathy is covered by insurance. So people can go to a naturopath for free, which is if they have insurance.
I agree, but thank goodness, Kaya, for people like you. But it's easy to see that there are more people that need help than you have hours in the day to help. So we clearly need more support of this kind, don't we? Related to that, Kaya, in the US, there's clearly a lot up in the air at the moment with the potential replacement of the Affordable Care Act. I'm aware that mental health coverage is a big question too. Are changes to healthcare going to make things more difficult for those taking or withdrawing from psychiatric drugs, do you think?
I think that's a great question. And it's so complicated, you know. I mean, as of right now, Obamacare is still, or the basic health insurance that we have with Obamacare is still in act, and it hasn't, I think that Trump's attempt to repeal it didn't work, yeah. But I'm sure he'll probably keep trying. It's interesting because like it can go either way with that. Like if we continue to have the same medical system, then people will continue to have all this access to psychiatric drugs and everything, which obviously they need if they're already on them. But it's also obviously not a great system that only pretty much provides people with either drugs or therapy, but very few other options. And they have to have a diagnosis and so forth. What I've noticed, though, in a lot of different communities is different sorts of alternative healthcare coming up really at the grassroots level. And that is where I see the big change happening. Like people starting herbal clinics that are totally donation-based and finding ways to get donations and grants and funding for that. Like the stuff we did with the Freedom Center, we offered free acupuncture, yoga classes, and herbs and all kinds of things like groups and, you know, support groups and connection for people. And I think what it's really about in the end is more about community even than any kind of medications at all. But yeah, there's a lot that people can do at the grassroots level, especially in some ways, because with this crisis in the US with the Trump administration, there is a lot more motivation that people have to donate to causes they believe in. I did write an article on that in America about like, so what, well, what does happen if people, if all these people lose health insurance and lose access to psychiatric drugs, or if they have to go to the emergency room in order to get them? We really have no idea what that will look like, but it's something I think about because psychiatric drugs could easily become inaccessible to people if we were to have some kind of major, you know, apocalyptic sort of situation, like where they were no longer accessible for whatever reason, you know, or if they were no longer accessible to poor people, you know, people who couldn't afford to pay for them out of pocket.
That avalanche of people suddenly and desperately needing withdrawal support and that falling on local doctors or emergency rooms, that could be a very big problem, couldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it would be, definitely. And I wonder if it would really rally people to actually take the situation more seriously, because right now it's like we have this sort of Band-Aid scenario, you know, where it's not in the state of like total emergency or total societal breakdown yet. Exactly. I mean, it sort of is under the surface, basically. But it's interesting because especially I think in America, there's this sense of like all the problems being sort of pushed under the surface. And that's why psychiatry has succeeded so well, because that's what our culture wants to do, is push things under, you know, and make things look okay and make sure we're quote unquote functioning, even if we're not feeling like okay, you know.
Well, again, the UK is very similar because dependence on prescription drugs is a big issue, but not one that's ever really talked about. And while people can get their drugs and carry on, they're much less willing to rock the boat or to make a fuss about these things.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge issue.
Kaya, thank you so much for talking with me today. I'm really grateful for your advice and for sharing your own experiences too.
And thank you so much for what you're doing with this podcast. It's a really, really great and very important project that you're doing.
It was really interesting to talk with Kaya and to hear how she helps and supports others withdraw from psychiatric drugs. If you'd like to know more about Kaya, you can visit her website, kayagrossberg.com. There's also a link to this on my own website in the links section.
Feedback.
Thank you so much for getting in touch and sharing your feedback and comments with me, and I wanted to share this feedback with you. I listened to your talk with Sinead in episode 25 and identified strongly with all that she recounted, particularly the unbearable sensation of tingling nerves. I have tried to describe that feeling to many mental health professionals and was met with blank looks when I said that I felt as if an electric current was passing through my entire nervous system. The hypersensitive person feels everything more acutely. What is named eccentricity could well be a form of hypersensitivity and not madness. I am rereading an old book I've had for around 30 years, The Chakras by C.W. Ledbetter, and therein lies a wealth of wisdom regarding the esoteric side of physical, mental, and spiritual knowledge. In particular, this quote stands out. "Do not believe anything because it is said by an authority, or if it is said to come from angels, or from gods, or from an inspired source. Believe it only if you have explored it in your own heart and mind and body and found it to be true. Work out your own path through diligence." Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And I think we can all relate to the feeling of being misled by supposed experts only to find the truth within ourselves when we looked. Thank you. Just to say also, if you're struggling with withdrawal yourself, you can visit my website, jfmoore.co.uk, where there are links to information you may find useful.
Please do not increase, decrease, or stop your psychoactive prescription medication without the advice and support of a medical or mental health professional.
Thank you so much for listening. Please come back next week for another episode. Until next time, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal. Come back next week for more news and views. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and subscribe in iTunes.